following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this March 31st, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on the final day of March. Can you believe it? Tomorrow is April 1st. And my goodness, how time flies when you're working all the time. That's what I say. So happy Monday, or happy Tuesday. Happy March 31st. Christian, happy Tuesday to you.
Happy Tuesday. It'll be a happier Wednesday when we get to celebrate your favorite holiday.
God. So stupid. April Fools are so dumb. It's just, it's fake. It's made up. It's like Valentine's Day, or I don't know, some of the other ones out there.
Why do you hate Valentine's Day?
It's a Hallmark holiday.
Man.
It's a money grab. Government.
If anybody's out there to love to love Mr. Goins, you send him a text. It's, no, just kidding.
No. Look, I've celebrated many a Valentine's Day, and I've thought the same thing in and out of relationships.
Sure. That's fair.
Well, why is it that you have to take one particular day to celebrate the love of somebody? Why not celebrate the love of them every day? Boom!
Well.
Yeah, and then April Fool's Day. Don't get me started on that stupid made-up holiday. That is, oh, God.
I didn't know that you were that strong about Valentine's Day as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Always have been.
Man.
Always have been. Always will be. No, April Fool's, just go ahead and don't be on social media tomorrow, because you will see breaking news that, you know, everything and anything could happen.
Yeah.
You know, whatever your worst nightmare for
LeBron
your favorite team
back
is.
To the Cavs.
Yeah, whatever the biggest nightmare for your team, go ahead and expect to see a graphic for it tomorrow.
Sure.
And then 30 minutes later, haha, just kidding, April Fools.
Or at the very bottom of the caption, it shows it after a big detailed report. We will not do that. We promise you we will not do that tomorrow.
I can promise you on everything.
Yeah. That none of our happen. News tomorrow. Hopefully there's nothing major
yeah.
on the news side of things that you hope is not April Fool's. But no, we will not be bringing any of that. We are diving into Auburn baseball, though, here this afternoon, for better or for worse, as they are swept by Alabama this past weekend. We're diving into what happened in the games, diving into some more of the conversations that are looming a little bit larger after the Texas series, of how Auburn can get guys on base, but by gosh, if you have runners on first and second, or the base is loaded, you're not bringing them home, and especially not after the first inning. We're diving into a lot of that conversation here, and just kind of what happened over the weekend, and where does Auburn sit right now, despite where we thought they could possibly be, what needs to be changed, what needs to go in favor of the Tigers to steer the ship in the right direction. And thankfully, or not thankfully, there's no time to harp on it, or no time to really sit and sulk, because you take on another top five team here tonight, a rematch over in Atlanta, with Georgia Tech, the Yellow Jackets, ready to return the favor on their home floor here tonight. And so we'll dive into some of the pitching news for Auburn baseball, of how a little bit of a different weekend rotation based off of a Tuesday midweek against a really good quality opponent, and then a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series with Arkansas this weekend. And so some things have changed. We'll dive into all of that here to start the show. And then, my goodness, despite the college football season just ending, You're only 300 days until the college football national championship.
Yes.
Which means because of that, you're only like 30 days until you're halfway through the season based off of how much they space out all of the conference and the postseason games. I mean, what was it? It was the Josh Pate tweet where there are how many weeks from the middle of the year?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, we're only 30 days until the college football season is halfway done. And then there's still 300 days until the college football.
I thought you were talking about the weekly thing that he tweets out of him, like looking at the field.
No,
18 more Saturdays. You know,
no, the one about what the mathematical halfway point is like week 8 in the college football season. But we're talking about this possibly being the year that the SEC bounces back, or how many teams can make the college football playoff from the SEC. And what happens for Auburn to be in that conversation? What needs to happen for the Tigers to be a part of the conversation, which is all that over the past couple of years we've asked about when November gets here. Be one of the 30 fan bases and programs that are delusional enough to feel like they can work their way into the college football playoff. And as of late, even when October gets here, you've been ready for the season to be over in basketball season to get here. So how can that change? Maybe that's with Gus Malzahn joining the college football playoff committee.
That's what we needed, is a man on the inside.
We got one now. We're the last team in the NCAA, the last Power Four program to have a voice and a say on the inside. No, but our news with Gus Malzahn joining the college football playoff committee. And how does that impact not only Auburn, but a lot of the teams in the SEC? How does that impact college football? All of that coming up here in a really fun hour number one.
Yeah, phone lines are open today. If you want to be a part of the show, we'd love for you to do so by giving us a call, 334-321-1390. That number again to call in, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And no weekly Auburn baseball interview today. It's normally on Tuesdays, right? We're on a rotation of head coach Butch Thompson, the assistant coaches, Auburn players as well. But with the travel to Atlanta today for the game against Georgia Tech tonight, made it a little bit more difficult for that to happen. So we're going to have that for you on tomorrow's show to recap the Georgia Tech game and then preview the Arkansas series. So that'll actually work out very well, because Wednesday, tomorrow, will be sandwiched equally between Georgia Tech tonight and the start of the Arkansas series on Thursday. So it'll work out well. So apologies not having that today, but we'll pick back up with a interview tomorrow for Auburn baseball. Getting 100% confirmation on that. So stick around and we will update you on that. But I know this is not on our rundown, but I missed this and just have to give props. About 30 minutes ago, this was announced that my favorite head coach in college basketball is a Hall of Famer. He's been inducted after 773 wins, 44 league titles, and according to Matt Norlander, he's turned it into one of the biggest brands in college basketball. I'm just so happy for my friend Mark Few, who has been voted to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, the head coach of the Gonzaga Bulldogs. Round of applause.
It's what making the tournament does. I mean,
it's what it does.
The Hall of Good, baby.
It's what happens when you beat San Francisco on a yearly basis. You get in the Hall of Average. Good for you, Mark Few. Congratulations. You join thousands of others who have watered down the Hall of Fame thing across all major sports. Congratulations. Win a lot of games against a lot of crappy teams, and you can be a Hall of Famer. That's such a joke.
Why would you do that when you could just be a fired college football coach and
true
make $10 million to not do your job anymore?
It continues to be the best job in the world. Man. A fired football coach. Unbelievable.
Also, speaking about things that are not quite on our rundown, before I promise we do dive in to Auburn baseball, or maybe we'll just keep stalling for a little bit longer, and then we'll preview Georgia Tech tonight. You never know how things work and maybe what we want to decide to do. Did you see the Braves City Connect jerseys this year?
I did see those.
They finally went back to the legitimate old school.
Yeah.
Rather than feeling like they couldn't have a lot of freedom, they went back to not quite the powder blues, but relatively similar, the retro A, rather than like the VA. It's the lowercase A that gives tribute to all of the guys in the 1980s and 1990s, and so really excited. I believe they're breaking those out on the 9th of April, which should be really, really fun to see.
Yeah, those are going to be cool. I know a lot of Braves fans are excited for that. It's always so hit or miss, right, with teams and their City Connects. Some teams haven't changed them in years. Other teams do it, you know, on a yearly or bi-yearly basis.
Yeah.
I love what Boston does. I love, love, love the yellow and blue.
Well, I was going to say, do you like those or the green ones? Because that was what they did.
Well,
this
the
past
green
year,
ones
right?
were sweet for the Green Monster, too. Those were, I don't know which ones. What's funny is with the Green Monster ones, when they first came out and I first saw it, I was like,
I remember you were sitting next to me and you were like, look at these. Gross.
And then I saw them on the field and I was like, okay, those are actually pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Those are pretty cool. I still like the yellow ones, too.
Aren't those the Boston Marathon colors? Mm-hmm. Is that the reason? Okay.
Yeah. And so, but I did see the Braves City Connects, and I think Braves fans collectively are actually pretty happy.
Very much so. Oh, yeah.
For the first time, collectively happy with something with the Braves in quite some time.
I still don't know if there's anything that will ever beat the Cherry Blossom Nationals ones.
Ooh.
Those,
what year was that?
Oh, gosh. That was the very first year that they did it. I'm trying to think if there's anything, any of the better ones. I know, like, the Astros have, like, the Rocket City ones, which are pretty cool, but they're still not. I mean, great radio here as I show you the Nationals City Connect. But I don't know. I'm trying to think. I don't think there's any of the better ones. Oh, they did do the light blue ones last year.
The Nationals did?
Mm-hmm. But it's still not as good as they used Juan Soto as their main graphic man for Washington to go and show you that.
Yeah, that's
but
funny.
No, but those are...
Oh, I do remember those. Yeah, those are sweet.
The little light gray with the cherry blossom.
WSH across the chest, that's pretty sweet.
And the hats are really nice.
Yeah. Speaking
Auburn
of
baseball
a team,
used alternate uniforms.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Speaking of a team that used alternate uniforms a couple of weeks ago, Auburn is reeling, right? Tigers are trying to figure it out. Butch Thompson and Auburn baseball. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but want to dive a little bit deeper into it today. Tigers got swept against Alabama, and Auburn has now lost 5 of their last 6 in SEC play. Very easily could have been 6 of their last 6, right? If you don't come back and sweep or come back and beat Texas in the Friday night game to avoid that sweep. But on a deeper level here, going back to Tuscaloosa, man, what happened? That's the question that we're kind of proposing. And we, again, we touched on it yesterday, but here today to get the show started, I go back to what's the mindset at the plate. That I can't get over that because it just seems to be almost non-existent, right? And it comes off to me as there's not a whole lot of communication. There's not a whole lot of information sharing. I'm not going to go as far to say there's not a whole lot of scouting. I don't think that's fair or accurate by any means because this Auburn baseball staff is very detail-oriented, has been for a long time, and they put in the preparation and the work to be successful, right, on a yearly basis. But it just doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of in-game, in-series adjustments. And that is frustrating because we've dealt with that for football, basketball, and now we're seeing it in baseball, too, in an area we did not think was going to be a big concern for Auburn at the start of the year, which is offensively.
Yeah, 4 runs in the last 4 SEC games. That's not enough to get the job done. I don't need to be holding your hand when I tell you that, as if that's shocking information, but you go scoreless against Texas, you score 1 run on Friday, 2 runs on Saturday, and 1 run on Sunday, and it's such a weird dynamic because Auburn scored in the top of the first in all 3 games.
Yeah.
Auburn struck first and did it with a couple of hits and then getting your big hit with a runner in scoring position. But after it became the second inning, either A, you couldn't get guys on first base, you dang sure couldn't do it on, we're going to get runners on first and second, And if you got runners on first and second base or second and third, you got guys in the scoring position. You read the numbers yesterday. If you want to read them here again today, I mean, it is abysmal. It is putrid to have to think about. I believe 108 was the runners on base, and it was 0.09 with runners in scoring position. And that is including your runs that you put up in the first inning.
Yeah, I'm pulling the official stat up, but I believe it was 5 of 46 with runners on base over the weekend.
And then 2 of 22.
With runners in scoring position, yeah.
And again, both of those hits came in the first inning. That's not good.
And
taking it with a grain of salt, again, we know that this team is going to be just fine when you get things figured out, and it very easily could be like what we joked about yesterday of you get three more hits in a series and you win the series most likely.
But I don't think in that scenario we would be sitting here saying, man, Auburn looked awesome.
Right.
Right? It would be, well, you survived.
Yeah.
You got it done. You did what you needed to do to win, which there's something to be said about that too. I think the problem with this and why we are starting to ramp up our concern here a little bit is this is two weekends in a row.
And even if you go back to Missouri, a 2-0 win,
yeah,
and then a 4-3 win in extra innings. Yes, the Saturday doubleheader game got away from Missouri late, but that was Auburn scoring, what, 5 runs in the 7th or whatever it was?
Yeah.
Because of a couple of long balls. But even then, we talked about it after Missouri of Auburn having to play basically 2.5 pitchers duels and going and winning it. And then with Texas, you scored 3 in the home half of the 9th. You struck late on the Saturday game against Texas, but that was one that you felt like was getting out of hand. But Auburn was able to continue to rally, and they got a couple of the hits, just couldn't find that big hit that you needed to a couple of times. And then on Sunday, in that contest, you lost 5-0. How many times do you get runners on first and second, but they all came with 2 outs?
Mm-hmm.
You feel like there's been so many different ways that the same story has been written, but you saw it in Tuscaloosa, and you feel like it was the same 3 books of, holy cow, we can't get runners on base. Our at-bats are not where they need to be. A lot of first-pitch swinging, a lot of soft contact, really, really early on in counts. And then the few times that you got runners on base, you either helped out the Alabama pitching staff, or you hit it right to a fielder.
Where my mind goes with all of that, too, is against Texas, who I think we saw collectively has the best staff in the country, right? You struggle early. That was your second SEC series of the year. Fine.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, not being great at the plate against Missouri is concerning. Being bad at the plate against Alabama is concerning because you look at what Auburn has coming up, right? You're going to take on Arkansas this weekend, who by the numbers, their staff may not be as good, but talent-wise is better than Alabama and Missouri.
And the rankings, they are not the 15th ranked team in the country.
No. They just have struggled as of late, too. Kentucky staff, decent. They've shut down folks. They shut down Alabama, right? And
didn't they win the series against LSU? Or did LSU
no, they dropped that? It. They dropped okay. It. They did get a game, though. They won a game in that series. Florida has a good staff. Oklahoma is okay. Texas A&M has a good staff. Mississippi State has a great staff. And Georgia has a great staff. It goes right along with what we say all the time. It doesn't get any easier in SEC play, and from just this angle of the conversation of Auburn's bats struggling, it's not going to get any easier, and what's even a bigger problem is that it continues to be 1-9. If it's one guy, it's like, hey man, Chris Rembert's just not seeing it well, let's give him a day off, let's give him a two, you know, take the series if that's what it takes. Like, let's get him in the cage, get the hitting coach in here, let's figure this thing out. It's one little tweak of the hands, and we're back to normal because that's how baseball is. It's like golf, man. There's one small thing, and it can change everything for you, right? If it's one guy.
And half of it's confidence.
Yeah, mental for sure. If it's one guy, that's one thing. But it's the whole team. I mean, there's not 2 or 3 guys that are hitting well right now. And we're not in danger territory yet because we're still not halfway through SEC play, but we're getting close. Remember those conversations we had during basketball season of you still have time to fix it, right? You still have time to change, and baseball and more than any other sport can flip on its head and you can figure it out and get hot and everything's fine. But there is a point at some point in the season where you are who you are. I don't think we're seeing this Auburn team be what it is.
No.
Does that make sense? This is not the Auburn team they will be all year, but the longer this goes on, the more concerned I get.
Auburn right now 4-5 in conference play. They're 20-7 overall, but 4-5 puts you at ninth in conference play, tied for ninth. With a bunch of teams, or three teams at 7-2, State, Texas, and Georgia. You have Florida and Alabama, who are 6-3 in conference play. A&M, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt are all 5-4. And right now, you're obviously seeing it like a NASCAR race, where everybody's kind of a big conglomerate. They're all kind of in the pack. But with every single lap or every single series that goes by, it's not simply a, okay, sweep or get swept. There's going to be 2-1s. There's going to be 1-2s. There's going to be 0-3s. And it's going to happen every single weekend to where you're going to start to see that pack space its way out a little bit while the conglomerate still remains in the middle. We had talks and we had conversations of if Auburn could get out ahead and be one of those leaders, it makes things a little bit easier when you're referencing the schedule that's upcoming because you just played two of the quote-unquote easier road series that you're going to have all season long.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be easy on the road tonight when Auburn goes to Atlanta to take on Georgia Tech in the rematch where Georgia Tech might have a little something to say tonight since Auburn run-ruled Georgia Tech when they came to Plainsman Park.
Almost.
Almost.
9-2.
Almost did it. But beat them handedly
yes.
in that game. Auburn goes back to Atlanta tonight for what should be a fascinating game. We talk about that and dive into some of the numbers right after this as we are just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking Auburn baseball as the Tigers head to Atlanta tonight, taking on Georgia Tech. Auburn 5-1 in midweek games so far this season. They're outscoring opponents 46-9 in the last five midweek games. They also, some of these numbers are fascinating, they have not allowed more than two runs in each of the last four midweek games. That includes a game against Georgia Tech where they only allowed two runs. But tonight is a little dangerous, right? Tonight is a little sketchy. Tonight could be a long night if Auburn doesn't bring their bats with them to Atlanta. But what an opportunity for Auburn here after not playing well this weekend, right? You easily got a midweek win last week in, believe run rule fashion, where it didn't really carry into the weekend, right? You didn't hit the ball well against Texas. You did in the midweek. You didn't against Alabama. By no means are we saying, hey, go put 11 runs on Georgia Tech tonight and figure it out. Thanks, bye. But, man, you do have a chance to figure it out against a very good baseball team.
Yeah, and with Alabama, I mean, as much as it hurts to think about, with Alabama still playing very well and after sweeping their last two opponents, that RPI for them is continuing to grow, which makes it to where Auburn's is not going to fall a whole lot, if really at all. But you find a way to beat Georgia Tech tonight, then there's the conversations of, okay, look what Auburn just did against Georgia Tech twice and Texas. Two top five teams, and you went 3-2.
Yeah.
I think that puts a little bit more of a legitimacy to the RPI, a legitimacy to the strength of schedule and your overall record and the things that will boost you into a hopeful national seed, whether that's regional, whether that's planning to host a super regional. But a big-time opportunity tonight. Georgia Tech right now looking at it, our heavy favorites. They're projected to win by more than just a run. And the over-under is 14.5. So they're expecting a lot of runs to be scored in this contest as well. And so should be very, very, very interesting to see what the Tigers can do in Atlanta, because, again, this is their final little tune-up before a really good opponent comes back to Plainsman Park. And I'm sure they're at the point of very thankfully returning back to Plainsman Park here this weekend.
Christian Chatterton set to make his first start of the year tonight. I think that's fascinating. Auburn has made some rotation changes in the pitching room, which will probably carry that into the next segment and talk about that quickly. But Christian Chatterton is set to get the start tonight, his first one of the year. I like it.
Yeah, very much so. And that with it, with a top five team that you're going to, and then the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you want to obviously keep Marciano as your Friday guy.
Yeah.
And so by no means is that a punishment towards him, or really a punishment towards any of the weekend rotation guys, because once again, you did your job this weekend. But I think people are starting to see what Alvarez has been able to do, and he is now going to be most likely your Thursday starter, keeping Alvarez or keeping Marciano for Friday, and then either Petrovic or Sanders for Saturday. But how good of a problem is that to have when you have a guy like Andreas Alvarez with the numbers that he has? He's proving himself to be a little bit more than a midweek pitcher.
Chatterton has enjoyed pitching against Georgia Tech. I'll give you the numbers in 3 appearances against the Jackets. Talk about that rotation, and we'll continue this conversation when we come back 30 minutes in to hour number one.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes in. Oh, God. 30 minutes in to the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Christian almost got canceled, but he didn't. He survived. Way to go, Brandon.
I always wait until the return is playing.
Yeah.
To make a funny.
Oh, it was something. Okay, we're continuing to talk a little Auburn baseball. We're going to get into Auburn football here in just a moment. Tigers taking on Georgia Tech tonight in Atlanta. You can listen to the radio broadcast over on our sister station, Wings 94.3, with first pitch set for 6 o'clock. They'll go on the air at 5:45, so be sure to flip over and check that out. Christian Chatterton set to start tonight. Would you like to know the numbers of Mr. Christian Chatterton in 3 appearances against Georgia Tech? It's something about the Jackets that he just really enjoys. In 3 appearances against Georgia Tech, including both midweek starts last year, Chatterton has allowed just 2 runs on 3 hits over 9 innings pitched and 12 strikeouts against Georgia Tech.
Is that good?
9 innings pitched, 12 strikeouts, 2 runs on 3 hits in 3 different games. Pretty darn good for Mr. Chatterton, who will be getting his, first start of the night. And then, a little bit of a different pitching rotation for Auburn heading into the weekend as well. Again, we'll kind of put a bow on all this here, but I like it. I think it makes sense. You see this sometimes in the college game and the high school game as well. It's kind of bleeding down into it, but I am in favor of it. Not that the pitching staff needed a shakeup by any means, but it's just more so keeping guys on track, keeping them on schedule, rather than, hey, let's change it up a little bit and see if that changes the mojo.
The Thursday game against Arkansas is almost what many teams and many programs think of what would be like a bullpen game in the MLB. Right, you don't want to mess up your starting rotation, and so you need 3 or 4 guys in the bullpen to cover a game for you. How nice is it, though, that because of what Andreas Alvarez has been able to do, if that's your bullpen guy, you feel like it brings a little bit of confidence to the guys in Plainsman Park, the guys that are fielding behind him, and then hopefully, very hopefully, the bats to come to life as well.
Yeah, well, we got a question about that in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And just asking if we could put our finger on why Auburn has not been able to hit the baseball with runners on base or in scoring position or both, right? I mean, it's very difficult to figure out. It's the reason that hitting a baseball is one of the hardest things to do in sports. But the fact that it's just bleeding through the entire team and it's also carrying into several weekends, right? If Auburn had not played a competitive non-conference schedule, right? If they had just played a bunch of nobodies and didn't go to Arlington and didn't play Nebraska and all that, Georgia Tech, right?
Yeah.
I would say they're adjusting to the SEC.
Yeah, it's like, okay, now there's the velocity of the fastball. There's the spin rate on those curveballs.
Yeah, that changeup's got a few extra miles per hour on it, things like that. But that's not the case. Auburn saw good pitching. Auburn saw good defense. Auburn saw good competition leading into SEC play. And so the only thing that I can think of is this, again, I go back to, I don't know what their mindset is stepping in. I don't know if there's a whole lot of conversation happening batter to batter or in the dugout or things like that. I don't know if you have a different evaluation of it, but that's where I go, basically.
It feels like, and this is just kind of the feel, I'm trying to pull up numbers here as well, but it feels as if the swings are very long for Auburn.
Yeah.
Very drawn out, very much, I'm going to yank this poolside. Auburn struck out 9 times in game one. Of course, it brings me back up to the top of the page. 9 times in game one. Come on, gosh.
You'll get there.
8 times in game two. And don't worry, it's going to bring me back up to the top right here. We're going to scroll back down, and we're going to find Alabama in game three. As it loads. And 8 times in game three.
Sorry, I had to finish it.
So that is, what, 7? Oh, gosh.
Oh, you weren't keeping track of it? Oh, no.
Yeah, that was bad.
Oh, no.
It took too long.
Oh.
It took too long. But that's a lot of strikeouts in 3 games.
They struck out a lot. Yeah.
And, I mean, again, a majority of those are either starting innings or, I mean, they happen with guys on base, too, and it just feels like there's not a clear sight right now with the offense. And you mentioned it, the batter-to-batter mindset of, We're gonna have to do our job mentality. Mm-hmm. Get them on, get them over, get them in, and that's how Alabama won, especially on Sunday.
Yeah.
With get them on, get them over, get them in. Took advantage of a couple Auburn mistakes. Took advantage of basically an Auburn error, a wild pitch as well that ended up scored LeBron. And that doesn't sound right to say, but LeBron came from third to home to score.
LeBron
and scored, but it just doesn't feel like there is a big mindset of a selfless at-bat. Feels like the swings are very long, creates to a lot of swings and misses, and I think that's what creates the big swings early in at-bats that creates a lot of soft contact, and all of those things kind of doubling down onto each other goes to show you why this team can't bring runs to the plate. And then the few times that Auburn does get a couple of gifts with a couple of walks or free passes or hit-by-pitches, we talked about it yesterday, and we talked about it on Sunday of, okay, it's a 1-1 game. Auburn may have a little bit of the momentum. Here comes runners on first. Oh, here's a walk. Now runners on first and second. Why are you going out of first pitch breaking ball in the dirt?
Yep.
4-3 put out. You help out the pitcher who's struggling to find the strike zone. All of a sudden, all of that momentum goes into the third base dugout.
Talking a little bit more baseball before we flip over to football. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. When Auburn beat Georgia Tech just a couple of weeks ago, Christian, what was the message coming out of that game? What was our talking point? What did we highlight for that Auburn team, for that win against Georgia Tech coming out of that midweek? Do you remember what it was? What was so significant about that Auburn did in that game against this particular Georgia Tech team?
I mean, was it the same conversation that we've had all year about being able to put guys away on the mounds and then put up crooked numbers?
Yeah,
and do it of an inning or one run here, 2 runs here, a run here. Next thing you know, it's 4-0.
Shutting down the nation's best offense.
Yeah.
Right. In the last 2 weeks, that hasn't changed. Here's some numbers on Georgia Tech.
The number was 25 strikeouts, by the way, for Auburn this past weekend.
That's a lot. Georgia Tech leads the nation in batting average, runs scored, scoring average, and on-base percentage. I'll say that again. Georgia Tech offensively leads college baseball in batting average at 365, total runs scored at 307, scoring average over 11 runs a game, and on-base percentage of 488.
A lot of that, not taking this away from the offense, Russ Chandler is a launch pad.
Yes.
But you still have to put the ball in play to be able to do that.
Yeah, they're 22-5 on the season, 9-3 in ACC play, and they've won 5 of the last 6 since losing to Auburn. They are doing just fine. Georgia Tech knows who they are, and tonight, Auburn's got to find a way to get the most out of Chatterton, get the most out of the pen, whatever rotation, whatever, you know, collection of guys you want to use for a midweek. You're not going to stretch yourself too thin going into Arkansas, of course. But
no, and that's kind of been the Georgia Tech mentality, not to cut you off. Over the past, I guess, 3 times that these teams have played, it kind of has been a pitcher by committee for Georgia Tech. It's been a lot of guys go, you have a starter that can get you 2 or 3, but as soon as he gets into trouble, you go to another arm, and then another arm, and then another arm. And it's yes to hopefully create mismatches for Auburn, but it's also them understanding that this is not the end-all be-all.
Right.
And it's more about, okay, rather than throwing your 40-pitch bullpen on a Tuesday, go get an inning. And I feel like that's what Georgia Tech has done. That's what Auburn has the luxury to be able to do. Yet you feel like you have one more quality starter than most teams do, which is why Auburn's in a great spot when the midweeks happen.
Yeah, updated RPI really quickly for college baseball. Georgia Tech is 20th in the RPI. This is as of yesterday, okay? Alabama is 6th. Auburn is still 4th in the country. Texas, Florida. Florida's up to number 2 now, which is insane, but you sweep Arkansas, that'll do it. Texas, Florida, UCLA, Auburn, Mississippi State, Alabama. That's your top 6 in RPI.
UCLA is damn good.
They're really good. I just wish they didn't play in the Big Ten. I wish they could play an SEC schedule. And that sounds so similar to what we say during football and basketball season of the SEC is just better. And, oh, they play, if they played an SEC schedule, they'd be 6-6. That's not what I'm saying. I want to see that UCLA team play good competition every week because I think UCLA could win. I think they could beat them. I just wish I could see it rather than playing in the Big Ten where they've got, what, one other team of competition. Let's look at the next closest Big Ten team in RPI.
I will, while you're looking that up, I will read you UCLA's schedule so far. They may not be doing it quite yet in Big Ten play.
I know they got some good non-conference wins, including a couple SEC teams. That's what I'm saying.
They swept TCU, who is the number 7th ranked team in the country. Yep. They got a win over Tennessee. They got a win over Texas A&M. And they got a win over Mississippi State.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I think they could compete.
That was their Arlington trip. 3 top 25 SEC teams. And they said, all right, 12-5, 11-1, and 8-7.
USC is 13th in the RPI. You can imagine USC being good, obviously.
Who they haven't played yet. They played Michigan, who they swept, and then Maryland.
The drop-off is just ridiculous. And then
they beat Iowa.
Nebraska's 24th.
They do play USC this weekend, which should be fun.
I mean, that's it, man. That's all there is in the Big Ten. It's those 3. Purdue is at 51. Like, Maryland's 39, but that's not week in, week out like the SEC is.
No, and that's why they have to go do a lot of their work if they want a high RPI in the non-com.
Yeah, that's right. Well, again, Auburn baseball tonight in Atlanta, taking on Georgia Tech. Wings 94-3 with a 6 o'clock first pitch. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number 1 and talk a little college football because we are 300 days away from the college football playoff national championship game. Crazy, right? We'll talk some storylines there, plus a new name, but a familiar face on the college football playoff committee. We wrap up hour number 1 with that next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Just a couple of minutes. We're going to talk some college football, but coming up in hour number two, we're going to talk Auburn basketball news of the day. Tigers make their first roster addition for next season, and Stephen Pearl heard the noise. A 7-footer has been added to the team. We'll talk about that. Plus some Auburn football news as well coming out of spring practice. Some cool, exciting things with Alex Golish. But speaking of college football, the countdown is on. 300 days from today, the college football playoff national championship game will be played. Pretty crazy, right? Pretty crazy stuff. And so many questions, right, that can be asked and answered hypothetically, and we'll do so over the next several months until college football begins. But is this the year that the SEC gets back on track, right? The Big Ten has won 3 in a row. How many teams can make it from the SEC? Is Auburn a team that can be a dark horse or in the conversation? Things like that. And sure, you saw the news today. Oh, Gus Malzahn found him a new gig. He said, I don't want to coach anymore, but I can't get away from the game. Those old ball coaches, man, they can't get enough ball, right? Gus Malzahn will now be on the college football playoff selection committee. All those guys, all those ladies.
We can't talk bad about it anymore. Dang it.
Darn. They all have, I believe, 3-year contracts that run out. And so Gus Malzahn will now be in the rotation and on the college football playoff selection committee.
I mean, even taking the Auburn bias out of there, which is not the primary focus of the conversation of talking about why he truly is the benefit of Auburn, like we made the jokes about earlier. But I mean, you talk about a coach that had success and a lot of it in the pre-NIL era, transitioned to being a head coach in the NIL era, and then dropped down to be an offensive coordinator in the NIL era. And so, I mean, you're talking about a guy that understands college football, what it was, what it is, and kind of the landscape of at least having an idea of what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that gives a little bit more validity than, yeah, but I watch it. So
yeah.
So I think I should have a say too.
Does it make it better or worse that he's a previous coach that has been at 3 or 4 different places?
Right.
I coached at Notre Dame for 48 right. years, and that, but I don't have any bias. I step out of the room when they talk about my team.
Yeah. Yeah, I just look at them and wink and let them know that, hey, remember what we discussed?
Mm-hmm.
Here's
– yeah.
I'm going to leave this envelope
now.
Here.
Yeah, I'll be back in just a moment. I will not be listening at the door.
And I definitely won't have anything to say based off of what I do not hear you say.
And I will not ask you who you voted for.
Yeah. No, but I do. I think being with multiple teams and in multiple conferences helps as well.
Yeah, I think so. I do too. So, good for him. You know, new gig. I don't really know what that pays, but, you know.
He needs it.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't think he's worried about the money side of things. But for real, is this the year that
the SEC... If you are coach, I mean, I'll take the lake house off your hands.
Yeah.
I will, in fact, watch it and make sure that it looks okay.
Yeah, I'll house it for a little bit. No, is this the year that the SEC can bounce back? I mean, the Big Ten's starting to take the SEC's mojo a little bit. And a conversation we might have later on in the week about the Big Ten across the major sports really starting to take that mindset and start to believe it. And for all the right reasons. I mean,
other than baseball.
Yeah, baseball, that'll never happen. Unless UCLA wins the national championship, then we're in trouble. But
even then.
But basketball has 2 out of the 4 teams in the Final Four trying to win its first title since 2000, and in dominant fashion if Michigan were to do so, beating several SEC teams in the regular season and the tournament along the way. And then college football, as we're talking right now on the way out, they've won 3 in a row, man. 3 in a row with 3 different teams. That's what makes it crazy, is 3 in a row... 3 different teams, one of them not being the historic Blue Blood. Ohio State, Michigan's one thing. Indiana just won a national championship.
Was it Rick Pitino the other day that talked about how much he enjoys today's college landscape so much now because there are no such things as Blue Bloods? And obviously he referred to that more on the college basketball side of things, but I think it's working its way in the college football landscape as well. And now that you have the talent up north that's staying up north, or even some of the talent that's in the south making its way up to the Big Ten.
I think that's the bigger part of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a little bit more, or even West Coast talent working its way, or I guess staying in the Big Ten now with the updated Big Ten, because, you know, why have teams in California in the Big Ten when you could just have them in the ACC or even in the Rest in Peace Pac-12, which is coming back, by the way.
RIP.
Let's go, baby. But no, I mean, I think there needs to be a conversation, and by no means do I think there's pressure for the SEC, because we've talked about it and we've discussed it so many times about the middle of the pack SEC is so much better than the middle of the pack Big Ten. But that's kind of the argument that the SEC has when the Big Ten goes, okay, that's cute. Look at this shiny gold thing over to you. So I don't know. It's definitely worth the conversation. I mean,
that's where the argument of, well, strength of schedule should matter.
Right.
Okay, cool. They're winning national championships.
Yeah.
Who cares?
And maybe that's why the SEC felt like they needed to go to an extra conference game.
Yeah. I don't know.
And that is why Auburn... Just kidding.
Auburn's win total 6.5. They are not expecting Auburn to be in the conversation of the college football playoff. But based on the schedule, right, which is something we have talked about and will continue to talk about...
It's easy, bro. I mean,
just win.
Just win your games.
Just win, bro.
Just score touchdowns.
You hear that,
don't
Alex?
Allow the other team.
Just score, bro.
Yeah. Simple game.
Win, survive, win. That's how we described it, right? Win September, survive October, and win in November.
And then in January, February, and March when the national championship feels like it's here.
Yeah, seriously. 300 days away between now and the college football playoff national championship. But hour number one is in the books. Stick around. Hour number two coming up, where we have more Auburn football to talk about, some spring practice notes and trends that we want to discuss, a cool new practice period at Auburn to get the guys fired up for the Iron Bowl, and Auburn basketball makes its first addition to next year's roster. All that coming up in hour number two. Don't you dare turn that radio dial.
Live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us. And if you missed any of hour number one, you can always go back and catch it with the podcast version of the show. We talked a lot of Auburn baseball as, of course, the Tigers got swept by Alabama. Kind of dove into what happened and why it happened and how Auburn is trying to change it up a little bit with the pitching rotation starting tonight with the game against Georgia Tech, so a lot of that in hour number one. Plus, we talked a little bit of college football playoff because the countdown is on. 300 days from right now is when the national championship will be played for college football next season. So, talked about that and how the SEC can try and bounce back a little bit, plus some conference odds and Auburn's win total. Can the Tigers be a thorn in the side of some folks? So had a lot of fun with that, and a familiar name will be on that college football playoff committee. We talked about that and had a little fun there as well. All that was in hour number one. If you missed it, be sure to go back and catch it with the podcast version of the show on our station website in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we're diving into a little bit of college basketball talk on the Auburn basketball side of things, because I think it's safe to say that Stephen Pearl heard a little bit of the noise. We're going to talk about the addition that Auburn has for next year. We're also going to dive into some of the numbers comparing last year's team to this year's team and the difference that size truly makes when you're looking at the paint on the rebounding side of things, the shooting splits, what the opponent's shooting percentage is, all of those numbers as well. We're also diving into Auburn football as spring ball updates. We have a new period at practice for Coach Golish and this team of just, man, we're going to infuriate our players. And we're going to dive into why that is. Also, some offensive line movements going around for Auburn football. And then just the wide receiver options. A fun conversation on that side of things, as you kind of have your wide receiver one, you feel like, but even then, it's not the standalone guy that you have to go to, and how this could be a little bit refreshing for Auburn football, as there's not the guy that has to throw or has to catch eight balls a game. There's so many different guys that you could put out at slot receiver. You could put them all the way out wide by the numbers. You could even line them up in the backfield, as you're seeing a lot of these guys get, and you feel like that's refreshing for Auburn football. And so all of that's here coming up in a really fun hour number two.
Yeah, so we start with Auburn basketball and the news of the day. The Tigers have signed a 7-foot center. That's right, 7 feet tall from France, Narcisse Ngoy. All right, that's the guy that Auburn has now added to the basketball roster. 7 feet tall. He's a professional basketball player from France. And Stephen Pearl says, we're excited to welcome Narcisse Ngoy to our program. Goes on to say he's a high upside young man who brings toughness, physicality, and a team-first mindset to everything that he does. He's 21 years old, all right, so he's stepping in to his first season of college basketball. 21 years old. He's played professional basketball since he was 17. So he's been around legitimate talent. He's been around legitimate dudes. He's been around legitimate teams, and he will now be an Auburn Tiger. 21 years old is Ngoy. Okay, N-G-O-Y is the last name. Ngoy from France. Averaged 10.5 points per game, 11.5 rebounds per game, and 2.5 blocks per game. And one of the most efficient guys you'll see from two-point range at 70% from the floor, from inside the arc, right, on his French national team, which is like the second tier of that, basically, on the team that he was playing on. But you said it, the idea that Stephen Pearl and his entire staff, including a new general manager, they heard the noise that Auburn was undersized. Auburn did not have a true center this past season. That will no longer be the case next year.
No, and you watch some of these highlights, and you see the physicality, you see the athleticism. Stephen Pearl talks about his ability to catch it with his hands, not his body, and be able to finish around the rim, which is something that Auburn has seen both good and bad over the past decade or so, it feels like. But 70% from the floor, and the fact that Stephen talks all about his really lack of care for personal stats. He says what stands out to me the most is his commitment to winning. He's not focused on individual numbers. He takes pride in doing the hard physical work that comes with helping a team succeed. He competes at a high level, processes the game well, and understands how to play within a system. And when you're looking at some of his high numbers, 21 is his league high rebounding numbers. A 21 in a game, also having 19 and 16, has blocked 6 shots in a game, and it's just the paint presence, right, that you have. We talk all about Walker Kessler and what he was able to do in his shot blocking, but it's not only that, it was the shot altering, mm-hmm. right, and the shot changing, or even just the, Walker's in there, I'm not going to drive in. That's something that Ngoy can bring to this team, and I think that is so refreshing based off of the team that you have this year with having a little bit of an undersized big man. And I think that Keyshawn Hall and Keyshawn Murphy
and even Elijah Freeman played those roles well, but you don't have that true paint clogger. Now you have that, and that's the best way possible to describe Ngoy, just because he's somebody that is willing to do, again, what Steven said, that physical work that most people don't necessarily want to do in this day and age of college basketball. It's much more of a finesse game. It's much more of a behind the three-point line, we're going to avoid contact. This is going to be the Ruben Chinyulu type of player that Florida had, of just the big body. I'm going to go get the rebound. If I foul you, you're going to feel it, and you're going to have to earn two free throws at the free throw line. Not saying he's that type of player. That's going to be the expectation for next season, but a very similar type of build, a very similar type of archetype Ngoy is bringing to the Plains.
Well, one thing that Steven said, and you kind of alluded to it there, was that he seeks contact, right, and not afraid of that. And I think that is something Auburn was missing this past season. You could even say they were missing it a year ago with Janai and Dylan. Dylan was fine with contact. I won't say he was the best finisher through contact. And
he didn't shy away from it, though.
He didn't shy away. No, but Janai Broome was very much, I'd rather fade away and flick the wrist rather than let me jump into you and hope that I get bumped, right? This guy, Steven said it, you said it, he seeks the contact. And you turn on the film, and he's dunking over two and three different guys. He's jumping through the lane.
With one arm, one hand.
This dude is a freak, because when you hear 7 foot, right, when you hear of a 7 foot center, you're thinking, all right, skinny green bean, like just, you know, arms and bones and has
He'll
no
muscle.
He'll
be good if we can get some weight on him.
Right. That's not the case with this guy. All right. Ngoy is a big dude, and he gives off a very Victor Wembanyama vibe to me, just with the length of him and the under control that he has when he has the basketball offensively, and them both being from France is, I guess, I don't know, I guess that's a coincidence, if you will, but they just have that same play style where they'll just do what they want to do, and they act like they're a guard. They're not, but they act like it. And Auburn now has a true center on the roster for next season. And again, Steven knew that. He knew they were undersized. He knew that was going to be an issue. And what's exciting here with Ngoy is, again, he's played pro basketball for the last 4 years. I don't expect there to be any major growing pains here, right? I think that was a trend early on with this international wave that we're seeing in college basketball, right? It was always, well, they played in Serbia, or they played in France, or they played in Spain, or played in China, but man, they don't know what's coming in the SEC. So there'll be a little growing pains, right? I think the more we're seeing this and the deeper we're getting into this idea, the less drop-off you're seeing of recruiting somebody like Ngoy, who's 21 years old, again, played in pro ball in France for 4 years, and now he's jumping into the college game. Got some other SEC fans and other fans of Auburn's rivals upset because of this, but this is the new era of college basketball, whether we like it or not, and I'm very vocal on not liking it. Auburn's taking advantage of it, and rightfully so.
I'm watching these highlights that Auburn basketball posted, and he's just bigger and better than everybody else. And not only is he 7 feet tall, but it's a 7'7" wing frame or wingspan. And he's rather mobile as well. I'm not going to go as far to say he's as mobile beyond the three-point line like a Victor Wembanyama. We're not saying Ngoy is going to go up here and shoot tween, behind the back, step back, threes.
No.
But he can guard his position very well, and he's not a total mismatch if you get the guard put on him, almost like what Dylan was able to do a lot last year. And I think that's really, really nice to see him, and you're watching him block three-point shots and then run into the paint and catch a lob or take one dribble from the three-point line and tomahawk slam with one hand.
The dude takes two steps from half court and he dunks it.
I mean, he is massive. But looking at what this Auburn team had last year versus this year.
And what do you mean last year? The season's still going.
Last year versus this year?
Oh.
I wish last year's season was still going.
Yeah, me too.
But no, the 2024-2025 Tigers versus the 2025-2026.
Don't you dare sell this team short. The season, I mean, talk about the Final Four on the Tigers.
No, I know better. But you're looking at it, and last year, this Auburn team had 1,423 total rebounds. 1,423. This year's team, the team we're watching right now, has just over 1,300. And when you're looking at it, and okay, yeah, you've played, what, 40 games about, roughly, or whatever it is. Okay, 100 rebounds isn't that big of a difference. It's 107 as we're looking at it right now. But say that's 3 rebounds a game. Call it 2.5 rebounds a game. Not only is that 3 rebounds not in favor of you, that's 3 more rebounds in favor of the team that you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
That is basically you miss a wide-open layup, and they go get a wide open and one because of a stupid foul and they're headed to the free throw line. And that's when you have those conversations of, holy cow, that was basically a 5-0 run based off of what you were unable to do versus what the team was just able to do. 3 rebounds a game is a big margin because that's essentially 6 rebounds. And if you call half of them offensive or half of them defensive, however you want to, stealing 6 possessions is very big in a college basketball game. You also look at what Auburn did last year in terms of just field goal percentage. Inside the three-point line, team shot just 40%. This year, they're shooting 46%. It's a big difference between the two.
Yeah.
Last year, team shot 29% from three, and not that Ngoy is going to be a big factor on the perimeter three-point shooting, but just looking at stats while we have them. Opposing teams last year against Auburn shot 29.8% from three. This year, it's 37%.
Jeez.
That's a very, very big difference. So
based on those numbers, then, where would you say Auburn on this current team, again, the one that's about to take on Illinois State in the Final Four of the NIT, where do you think they were struggling the most or missed a true center the most? Is it rebounding? Is it defensive paint presence? Is it an offensive weapon on that end of the floor? Where did Auburn suffer the most by not having a true center? Because, look, Keyshawn Murphy played well. He did, but he's not a center. He's a four. He's a power forward in the SEC. I'm sorry. That's just what he is. And same thing with Filip Jovic. He's not a true center either, and obviously has been playing more minutes down the stretch. But based off of that, Christian, on this current team that is a couple of games from being done, where did they suffer the most by not having a true center like a seven-footer in Goy?
Looking at just the numbers, and if I didn't watch any games, I'd easily be able to tell you defensive rebounding. Because going back to last year's team versus this year's team, that's almost where the entire difference is. Because Auburn this past year, or this year currently, wasn't a terrible offensive rebounding team. No. They were able to get it, but a lot of that was because of more missed shots. But defensive rebounding, I would easily say, is the one thing because, I mean, when you look at what Janai and Dylan were able to do, they averaged 15 plus rebound, defensive rebounds a game.
The amount of one and dones for teams against Auburn last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you think about it, yes, there were a lot of wide open threes, but how many of those came off of easy offensive rebounds that other teams were able to get?
True.
I think that if you're looking at it just from the number perspective, I would say defensively, but I think having an offensive anchor is a very big relief in there as well. Last year, everything ran through Janai, and you allowed the guards to go get to their spots, whether that was Miles, whether that was Tahad working off of screens, whether that was Chad Baker-Mazzara doing what he needed to do. This year, everything was built around the perimeter to where you didn't have that full drop-off force. You didn't have somebody in the dunker's lane. You didn't have somebody there to kind of calm down and win a possession when needed, or go and do that dirty work to steal a possession, steal an offensive rebound, have a layup, a dunk, or kick it out for an open three.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. Just on the eye test, I think not having a physical presence on offense inside the lane really, really hurt Auburn, especially when the shots weren't falling for a team that fell into the trap of just shoot your way out of it, and this team is clearly not good enough to shoot their way out of it. Having a big man that you can go to and rely on to get a bucket, Auburn missed that. But they should have it next year with Ngoy, a 21-year-old from France. We'll talk more basketball right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Talking more Auburn basketball as the Tigers make their first, not off-season move, but make their first move for next season, because it's technically not the off-season, but it kind of is the off-season. I don't know how you want to describe it, but regardless, Auburn basketball made its first action for next year's roster with the addition of Narcisse Ngoy. Again, he is a 7-foot-tall center from France. He's 21 years old, played 4 years of pro ball overseas in the second to highest level of professional basketball in the country of France, right? And there's a lot of a particular fan base from across the state that is not happy and has been talking today about Auburn and them making this addition. Oh, now you got to add pro players just to get back to the tournament and be competitive, blah, blah, blah. Look, I've been very vocal about not really liking this era of college basketball, right? Because the argument here is, well, this guy hasn't used any of his college eligibility yet, so he should be able to play. Okay, but he's also 21 years old and has been playing professional basketball, right? It comes back to the difference in a G League NBA player versus this guy playing in France, and now he's coming over. I'm sure he's real focused on that college education and things like that, right? There is a real big discussion on that, and you could talk about whether people like it or not. I don't, but with the current state of college basketball, Christian, if you don't do this, you're left behind. Look at the teams in the Final Four.
Yeah.
Look at the teams in the Final Four. Illinois, loaded with overseas guys. Michigan, overseas guys. Arizona has over... like, these teams recruit overseas players. Look at the teams that were in the Elite Eight, right? Duke and Tennessee. These teams have realized there is some really good talent across the water. And they're going and getting these kids, not even kids, these are grown men that are now playing college basketball. And we're getting away from what college ball used to be, but that is not just because of this scenario. So I get other fan bases poking fun and being frustrated or whatever. Again, I don't love the idea, but for right now, with where college basketball is, it's a great avenue to get better.
It very much is. It's one of those you can get better quicker. That's kind of what we've talked about in every single sport. And if you're going to tell me that Ngoy won't be a positive presence for Auburn next year, I'd tell you that you were lying just by looking at the intangibles that he has by a 7-foot frame, 7'7 wingspan that's mobile and will continue to be in the middle of the paint for this Auburn team. You were last segment, you were asking where Auburn didn't feel the presence of a big, big man like Ngoy will have this year or this upcoming year for Auburn. Look at the block numbers as well. Last year with Janai and Chaney and Dylan, who led the way with blocks, they had 224 as a team.
Mm-hmm.
This past year, 150.
Yeah.
That is 74 shots that you swatted away that had no chance at going in. Then you think about the shots that Janai and Dylan couldn't get to, but altered. That is what a paint presence is able to do. And I feel like it is a very big relief. By no means are you anywhere near done. And you probably need a second one if you're Stephen Pearl, a second guy to rely on, unless you're going to move Phillip into that five role, but I don't think that you will. And if Oporum is healthy and he can stay, I think that's a big asset too.
It's also a big question.
But a very big question mark, yes. And that's all with, is Sway staying? Is Phillip staying? Is Elijah staying? Is Tahad staying? There's so many questions. Is KO staying? All of these are arising. And so to at least have a stable base, no pun intended, that you're bringing to your team for next year, you feel like brings a little bit of relief. But my goodness, you look at just some of these stats comparing last year's team versus this year's team, and you can't get away from it. I know we're not spending the entire time talking about it. Last year's team had 613 assists. This year's team had 460.
Oh, that's so gross.
That is a very big difference. 462 to 613.
Yeah.
That's talking about a point guard and a team that moves the basketball as well as you saw the 2024-2025 team. You're also looking at, what was the other big number that I found? I don't remember exactly. I found another one, but I don't remember exactly what it was. Oh, the three-point percentage from last year. Again, we mentioned it last segment, but 29.8% last year versus 37% this year. Talks a lot about the defensive guard mentality.
Yeah.
And so,
and the commitment to defense.
Yes.
And the buy-in on defense.
And again, that just goes to show that there needs to be and there should be, and you can almost use that 2024-2025 season not as a direct blueprint, but as a, okay, when things go great, this is what our numbers should at least be trending towards, right? And obviously every team brings its own flavor, brings its own style of basketball, and the 2024-25 team was very slow, very methodical. It worked from the low blocks and worked inside out, but this past team didn't really have an identity at all.
Mm-hmm.
It had the three-point line, and it had whoever was hot, and it had, okay, you missed, all right, let me try.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is where you saw the frustration. That's where you saw the struggle. That's where you saw teams take advantage of Auburn, because Auburn almost shot themselves in the foot and allowed other teams to go on 12-0 runs, which you saw plenty of times, or go on those runs middle to early in that second half to where, oh, crap, we're down to 6 minutes left, and a 15-point lead is now six, and we gotta put our guys back in and play wire to wire. I think a blueprint is at least there to show what success looks like. And there are some categories that are very similar, but there's ones like that are blatantly and glaring difference.
And you don't even have to go back to Auburn's Final Four team. Just look at the Final Four teams right now.
Sure.
Look at those teams. What do they have? They have competitive fives. They have forwards. They have shooters. And they have a point guard. That's what they have. I mean, bro, you're talking about Keaton Wagler for Illinois. You're talking Braden Burries for Arizona. You're talking Elliot Kudeau for Michigan. Like, that's as good as it gets, man. Those are three of the best point guards in America. It's no coincidence that they're leading their teams to the Final Four on top of everything behind them, right? Good shooters and good forwards and good bigs and a little bit of depth as well. So Auburn and Stephen Pearl, yes, go back and look at the Final Four team that you guys built and how you did it and try to copy and paste, but there are other examples out there too. That's all you got to look at is what is currently preparing to play in the Final Four on Saturday.
Yeah, and how different your team was this year.
Yeah.
And how...
But on paper, on paper, it seemed like Auburn's team had some of that. You had the point guard.
Sure.
You had the forwards. You didn't have the big, and you thought you had the depth. It just didn't pan out that way, right? And that's basketball, that's sports, but you knew going in you didn't have enough.
Yeah, you knew that, and we tried and had conversations of, okay, well, talent and speed is going to be the biggest thing that this team has. The transition buckets, health, injury status obviously played a big factor in that, to where you couldn't play your transition game, but then go look at all the guys like Arkansas, or the teams like Arkansas, that only plays seven guys, but second in the country in transition points. And so a weird dynamic from this Auburn team to even other teams in the SEC this year, much less teams of the SEC from the past or teams that are still playing basketball right now.
Good news is Auburn makes its first off-season move. They add a 7-foot center from France. We'll take a break. We'll come back and flip to football and talk a little Alex Golish, because spring practice is underway and some good vibes coming out of our spring camp. We'll talk about that next.
Auburn High.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us, and we transition into some football as we will continue working this back into the fold now that spring practice is here as we get closer to Auburn football's spring game, right? A-Day coming up in a couple of weeks, and the Tigers are now 7 practices in to spring football, and you know, there seems to be a lot of good vibes coming out of it. There's always storylines, and I'm not one to jump on something in particular and make a huge deal out of it unless it's a, you know, an injury or somebody leaving the team or something like that. But in terms of what Auburn has been up to, right, I want to hit on some offensive line stuff here in this segment. I also want to talk a little receiver as well. But we got to start with this thing that has kind of gone a little viral today from Auburn's practice, where they have now a new drill, a new session, where it's called the Iron Bowl drill. Okay, or the Iron Bowl period, where they announced this as the Iron Bowl period of practice, where Dixieland Delight is just going crazy in the speakers, okay? And apparently, they do this every day for like 15 or 20 minutes or something like that, where they are, I don't know, are friend Nathan King at Auburn 247 said this. I think it was more jokingly than anything, but they're blaring this song and putting the guys through these drills to kind of make them mad and make them not want to play in Tuscaloosa or anything like that. I think that's funny, but it's called the Iron Bowl drill to get the guys fired up, to get them ready to go when you play Alabama. And you know, we've seen teams and coaches do this sort of thing in the past, but I think it's awesome. I think it's very fascinating, and the Auburn fan base seems to have jumped on it pretty quickly.
Shows that Alex Gullish gets it. And it's an overused saying, but I think it shows that he understands what the rivalry means. He understands holding up his end of the bargain, because the other teams recently have not held up the bargain to Alabama.
What do you mean by that? 6-0 mean anything to you?
No.
Okay.
0-6 does.
0-6. Sorry.
Yeah, but no, I think it's really funny. This the training session of, man, we're gonna piss these guys off so much to where at the end of the third quarter, when Dixieland Delight plays at Bryant Denny Stadium, mentally they're gonna go back and just be so pissed off.
Right.
It's almost like those the big science experiments of you ring the bell and you give a dog food. After so many times, the dog expects the food after hearing the bell, and not that that's a direct correlation, but almost setting your mind up to, okay, we hear this song, prepare my body for 15 minutes of hell, of what is going to be not fun, what is going to just be absolutely miserable, but then you get rewarded of it after that one session, and hopefully rewarded at it at the end of the fourth quarter.
Well, it comes back to the idea that as your rival, or as Auburn and Alabama, you should be preparing 365 days a year to beat Alabama, right? That's what it has been for years. And I feel like because of a lot of factors, Auburn changing coaches and Auburn being irrelevant and NIL transfer portal and not having the program pride like it used to be in, you know, the 90s and 2000s and even the 20 teens as well, right? In the glory days, as the purists would say. But back in the day, you trained 365 days a year to beat Alabama. You trained 365 days a year to beat Auburn, right? I heard it growing up all the time, and coaches still talk about it. Ryan Day at Ohio State and the ever-changing coaching circle at Michigan, too. They train year-round to beat the other school,
yeah,
right? Because in this world, with these four teams in particular, as fascinating as it is, right, the winner of that game, whether it be Michigan, Ohio State, or Auburn, Alabama, the winner of that game typically goes on to have a say in who wins the national championship. Look at the last 25 years. Typically, the winner of Ohio State, Michigan, and Auburn, Alabama has something to do with the national championship winner, which is why you should prepare to beat your rival 365 days a year. And so, if that's the goal, if that's what Alex Golish and his staff are trying to do with this Iron Bowl period, I love it. And it is getting back to the basics. It's getting back to why you play college football in the SEC, why you play for Auburn. It's to beat the team across the state, which, if you didn't pick up on the joke, the three main sports for Auburn went 0-for in the last calendar or athletic season. Football lost, basketball lost both games, and of course baseball came up short and got swept this weekend. That's not okay. That has to change somewhere. And we've talked about how it seems like the lack of success for football has started to bleed into all the other sports.
Yeah.
And it's got to start somewhere. And so, no, I think this is cool. Again, a lot of the fans seem to have taken and ran with this Iron Bowl period of practice that the media got to see today. So, good for Alex Golish. I think it's cool.
Again, I mean, whether it's something that's used just for the spring or it's used throughout the season, I mean, by no means are we going to be the ones to harp positively or negatively on what the coaches and what the trends are doing during practice, but everything you've heard and seen so far from practice, and we're talking about practice? But the vibes, if you will, seem very, very high. All of the videos that get posted on social media every single day, it seems like there is a joy to go out and coach. It seems like there is a joy to go out and perform. Mm-hmm. And you feel like, as stupid as it says, like, yeah, there should be, there better be. It just feels like there's a little bit of a different energy. And I think that's a very good sign for this Auburn football team.
Yeah, so some of the actual position notes and things like that from practice over the last day or so, definitely been some rotation at offensive line. Today there was Joe Simmons at right tackle, Cole Skinner at right guard, Cole Best was playing center today, Plaz was playing left guard, and then a rotation of Wilson Zaire and Ty Buster at left tackle. Reminder that there are a couple of guys not playing. Stanton Rommel is not in that rotation at offensive tackle right now, so keep an eye, or I guess keep that in mind as well. Second team was Parker Pritchett, Jacoby Ward, Cale Ellis, Kenneth McManus, and then Joe Simmons. That will be an ever-rotating group in spring because,
sure, as you hope it should be.
Well, that's what I say. Let's just be real. I don't give a flip on who's playing first team, second team on a Thursday afternoon or a Tuesday morning at practice in March. I just don't care. Because guess who else doesn't care? The coaches.
Yeah.
They're not like, all right, let's put our best and see what they've got right now and make a call and stick with it. That's not what this is about. This is about, let's put these guys in different scenarios. Let's put them in different situations. Hell, let's put them in different spots, yeah, and see what they got. Oh, you played guard in high school, but we recruited you as a tackle? Cool. Let's put you at guard and see what happens, right? And vice versa. And, oh, you played center two games in high school. Sweet. Let's throw you in the fire and see what happens. That is what spring is about. When we get to the fall, that's when you start really taking note of, okay, this guy's starting at right guard most days with the first team in the fall practice. That's probably what the expectation will be. And you might even get a little bit of a glimpse of that, Christian, in the spring game coming up for A-Day a little,
sure,
bit. But again, don't buy into all of this and say, well, I mean, I saw Joe Phillips at the edge spot. He was like third or fourth in the rotation today. So he must suck. He must be terrible. Auburn probably just not even going to use him. Don't do that to yourself, yeah, please.
Second string guys, oh, man. they're already playing over the starters.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't know what we're doing. I don't think it's anything like
that. No, I don't either. So, offensive line, you at least have some options, if nothing else. You at least have some dudes. I know. What a crazy idea that is. The wide receiver room continues to just be loaded. I mean, close your eyes and pick one, and there's a number of options in there. Christian Neptune, Corey Pettigrew, Bryce Kane, Keyshawn Singleton, Nimrod, Koger. I mean, there's so many options at wide receiver, too.
I still have my guy out there as well, Sam Turner.
Yeah.
Really excited for what he is hopefully able to bring to this team. But we mentioned it before. How refreshing is it that you may not have a wide receiver one, wide receiver two, wide receiver three, and then everybody else? It is a unit. It is a wide receiver room that anybody can go out there and have success on any given day, and you don't really know which one it's going
to
be.
I'm hearing the tight end spot is going to be a priority for Auburn, too.
Whether that
be
really
Jake
well.
Johnson or Jonathan Echols, either one of those guys, I think Auburn will. I feel like I've said this for years on this show.
I was about to say, be careful.
Yeah, I've said this for years. This is the year that Auburn goes back to the tight end spot. This is the year the Tigers remember there is another pass catcher on the field. I'll see it. I'll believe it when I see it, I guess. But at least the opportunity is there. Byron Brown continues to just shine and is leaps and bounds better than everybody else in the quarterback position room, which is supposed to be the case,
sure,
right? But the idea that it's just clean, man, when he throws the football. Everything that I've been able to see and read.
I don't know. It doesn't look clean. It looks a little funky to me, Jake.
Good. Let it be funky then. He threw for three grand last year. I don't care what he does. I don't care if he throws it with his toes. If he gets it there on time and on target, I'm fine with it. It's the idea that in March, he already looks like he's midseason form.
And not only in the talent level, their talent department, but the leadership factors are there as well.
Yeah.
Which you feel like is really nice to have, because you feel like as of late, and Jackson may not have been this as much, but was at least a little bit quieter being one of the transfers, but that quarterback room most of the time is the lead by example, the quieter leaders. But to have your captain be one of the more vocal guys hyping up the offense and the defense, I think is a very different way of looking at it. And I feel like that's what shows the stardom, not only with the talent-wise, but just with that leadership.
Well, as a transfer, I mean, it can be difficult to step into a new team and start barking orders or being
right,
holding guys accountable, right? That's leadership is what that is. And being a transfer, it can be very difficult to do that, but my goodness, I can only imagine how much easier it makes it where it's your coach, your offensive coordinator, your offensive system. It's just a different
logo.
Building and a different logo,
yeah,
right? I mean, that has to make it so much easier for a guy like Byron Brown or some of these receivers or running backs or whatever the case may be, right? For guys who came from South Florida, or just talking Byron Brown in particular here, it has to make that so much easier to say, yeah, I know what the expectation is. I've been with this guy for a couple of years. This is how we did it. This is how we are going to do it. I don't care what you other Auburn guys say. And I don't think that comes off in a very nasty, negative way. I'm just saying it has to be a lot simpler, easier, calmer, I guess, for Byron to step up and be a vocal leader.
And how we haven't really talked about this, and I guess this would be more so for something tomorrow if we want to dive into this conversation, but when was the last time that Auburn truly felt comfortable with a coach and a quarter an offense and a quarterback knowing the system in spring ball?
Yeah, I mean, it's the returning quarterback conversation.
But even you feel like Peyton Thorne, even when he returned for year two, it didn't feel like there was a true knowledge of what the offense was going to be. And I think we have learned more recently that's not necessarily all because of Peyton Thorne not knowing the offense. It's because the offense didn't really have a system. You now have a guy who's been in this system with Golish for quite some time, and it is a true comfort. Rather than learning, it's executing.
Yeah, and growing and prospering from that. And
I think that's a big thing that hasn't been talked about enough.
Yeah, I agree with that. So a lot of good notes, a lot of exciting notes coming out of Auburn football spring practice as they are rocking and rolling. Today was day 7. The A-Day game is quickly approaching. We'll take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Come back and wrap it all up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. We've had a ton of fun, and my goodness, we've covered a lot of grounds on the show today. We've talked all three major sports, right? We've talked baseball, we've talked basketball, we've talked football for Auburn. Some generics in there as well. The countdown to the College Football Playoff National Championship game is on 300 days from today. So we talked about that. Had our usual baseball conversations. Did not, unfortunately, have our weekly baseball interview. That'll be tomorrow. Okay, we're going to have that for you on tomorrow's show. Recapping Georgia Tech tonight. Also previewing Arkansas this weekend. With the travel to Atlanta today, made it a lot more difficult for us to make that happen, and totally understand. And so we'll have that for you tomorrow. And but we did still talk Auburn baseball, plus, again, some college football playoff conversation, recapped and gave our thoughts on Auburn basketball's new it's not even a transfer addition, it's just roster addition, with a 7-footer from France. And then we just talked some Auburn football spring notes as well. So all of that was on the show today. Again, if you missed it, you can always go back and check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And yes, Auburn baseball tonight is in Atlanta taking on Georgia Tech, the return trip. Expect the Jackets to be more like Hornets tonight and be upset and very angry. And Auburn has to find a way to overcome whatever this past weekend was, and you could really help yourself out with a nice win in the RPI category with a win tonight on the road against Georgia Tech. Maybe figure the bats out a little bit and take that into Arkansas. That radio broadcast will be next door on our sister station Wings 94.3. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we will have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 kind of recap Georgia basketball's season, talk about what they're going to be doing in the transfer portal, getting some updates from Georgia football spring practice as well. Probably some NFL draft stuff in there as we get closer to that. Also, Double D Wednesdays, Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn in the Barn will be joining us. And then, yes, we will have our weekly baseball interview tomorrow to recap Georgia Tech and preview the Arkansas series. So that is coming up on tomorrow's show on April 1st.
Man.
I promise you there will not be any April Fool's jokes. I've talked about it every year since I've done this show. I absolutely hate April Fool's Day. I think it is stupid. I think it's a made-up holiday. It's like Valentine's Day. It's fake. I don't buy it. I don't believe it. I think it's stupid.
There you go. You'll find out tomorrow if he's joking.
Yeah.
No, but also on the family of radio stations, we have Lee Scott Academy Baseball here tonight taking on Smith Station. And I didn't realize it until yesterday or maybe the day before that we've basically played your area stretch. We've played Central.
Appreciate you giving us the
insight on that.
We've
played Opelika and we've played Smith Station. And so I think that goes as a major compliment to this Lee Scott team in how the mindset is not, they're only a 3A team. There's nothing we can gain from it. These have been three games tonight, down to the wire, where Lee Scott has had more than enough chances to win, and very frustrating losses. And although they are still very quality losses, that's not something that we believe on the show, and I don't think that's something that Coach Jared Cook believes in as well, with Lee Scott having multiple chances against Phoenix City or Central Phoenix City, and then having the game-winning run thrown out in the home half of the seventh inning for out number 3. That one hurt this past weekend. And so hopefully looking to turn the tide against the Panthers here tonight. We are going to go on air here very shortly. We're getting on the road. Airtime scheduled for 4:45, 4:50 with a first pitch scheduled for 5 p.m. over on Tiger Country 104.5, tigercountry.net, and that Radio Alabama app.
Yeah, so be sure to check that out. You can flip back and forth between that, Auburn baseball and Wings 94.3, and Auburn High softball tonight with our buddy Jack Cutton on the call on the Auburn High Sports Network. It's the Tigers and the Dogs. It's Auburn and Opelika tonight for Auburn High softball at the Auburn High Softball Complex. That'll be on 96.3 W Lee on the Auburn High Sports Network. Tigers played Enterprise last night. They've got Opelika tonight at home. They'll have the return trip to Opelika on Thursday for softball. So very busy week across the family of radio stations. Busy nights. Three of our stations have local sports on them. So pick a station and stay on it, rotate, download the Radio Alabama app to where you can catch all the action. So that is going on across the network tonight, and we're back tomorrow for the first show of April. Oh, God, that's so crazy. 3 months into 2026, over 25% of the way there, folks. Hope you're taking advantage of it. We're back tomorrow with a loaded show. Three wonderful guests will have it for you between 2 and 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.